Okay, paper 116, section 4, which is old single column, page 1271. Before we jump into this next section, let's take a little bit more time to see if we can digest kind of the main thing that they were alluding to in this previous section by these little subsection titles and structures. And then also that passage we referred back to in the Paradise Trinity paper. Let's take a little bit more time to think about those. See if we can, you know, we've been attempting to recognize this heretofore unrecognized aspect of deity, which we've been slowly recognizing by following their lead that it has an obvious name, the Mother. And let's think about some more about exactly what is that distinction between the Father and the Mother, and also between existential and experiential deity, because they made such a sort of big to-do here in this previous section about the way they constructed the section that they want us to do that. So let's just take a little time before we start on the next section to do just that. So when you look back in that previous section, section 3, the big thing that jumped out, which or should have jumped out at you, based upon the whole way they've been talking about God and deity, you know, in most of the rest of the book, you know, it's all first source and center of all things and beings, seven absolutes of infinity. Let's start there and let's see how much we can understand from there. You know, we all know that is the primary mode that they've been trying to introduce us to the bigger picture via starting with something that it's not too hard to understand, the first source, the notion of the first source and center, which gives rise to the second source and center, and the two of them together give rise to the third source and center, and the three of them together give rise to the Paradise Trinity. Now that's the basic way they've been presenting the information in the Revelation. But here, see, they're obviously suggesting something in addition to that. Because they could have put these three subsections in the order first source and center, second source and center, third source and center, but they didn't. And you want to ask the question, why didn't they do that? And we noticed how many times leading up to this point that they kept saying, what we're talking about here is something to do with the Trinity, so they kept putting the word Trinity in your head. So you had the word Trinity firmly in your head, and then you got to here, and you saw, okay, Trinity's in my consciousness, and then they're telling me third, second, first. Wait a minute. That's like the opposite direction, the way they've been talking about it all the time. Why are they doing that? And the big point at which you are, they're pointing to that, is right in section, the second to the last paragraph of section 2. I'll just read that. Remember how they italicized existential and experiential. Let me just quickly read that, because that was what was leading into this 3-2-1 that they are giving in section 3. By the technique of mortal logic, it might be inferred that the experiential reunification of the collective acts of the first three levels of God the sevenfold would equivalate to the level of Paradise Deity. In other words, if you go 1, 2, 3, Paradise Trinity, if we kind of went backwards, wouldn't we just end up back at first source and center? And what was that?
Where are you?
Oh, that's that. This the second to the last paragraph of section 2.
Or verse 6.
It starts with the entire scheme?
No, it starts by the technique. Paper 116, old single column 1270, 116, section 2.
I'll find it.
Okay. Just look right above the Almighty and the Paradise Deity, two paragraphs up. Okay, so, you know, they're just saying that, you know, wouldn't that be what you would expect? You know, based upon all the things that they've been, how they've been presenting stuff. That the first three levels of God, the sevenfold, would equivalent to the level of Paradise Deity. But such is not the case. Paradise Deity is existential deity. The supreme creators, in their divine unity of power and personality, are constitutive and expressive of a new power potential of experiential deity. And this power potential of experiential origin finds inevitable and inescapable union with the experiential deity of Trinity origin, the supreme being. See, it's right there. What if you don't start with the first source and center as your origin concept? So that you go second, third, Trinity. And it's all existential. What if you start with the Trinity? What do you get? Do you just get 3, 2, 1? No, aren't they saying, no, you don't. So what do you get? So let's go back to that. It's old single column, page 113. It's paper 10, section 5, that first paragraph. Remember how we pointed out these four descriptions of the functionality of the Trinity, of the Paradise Trinity. Right there in that first paragraph, it says that they are justice administration, totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic over-control. Justice is the attitude of the Trinity. Okay. That end of those, that sequence of four functions or functionalities is obviously starting at Trinity. Because point blank, I mean, if you want one, like you said, one word for justice administration, I mean, the one word would really have to be Trinity. And if you look in the next section where they're talking about stationary sons of the Trinity, they just tell you point blank, which they tell you in a lot of places in the book, justice is the attitude of the Trinity. I mean, that just is the Trinity. If you say, well, I wonder if this is a sequence, and if it is, if it's Trinity on one end, it must be first, source, and center on the other end. But you know it's not, because they just told us that, you know, that's not the case. If we start with the Trinity, if the Trinity is the origin, you don't just go back through 3, 2, 1. What is on the other end? The root of the Father is the first source and center. At the far extremity of the aspects of the Father is the infinite upholder. That's what's the other end. If you start at the Trinity and go all the way to the other end, you don't get to the first source and center, you get to the infinite upholder. The other end, if you will, of the nature of the Father. Okay? However, there's a parallel, and that's what that section we just read, section 3. They purposely gave you 3, 2, 1 because they wanted you to reflect on how this other expression of deity nature is not completely orthogonal or something to, completely different than what you know about existential deity with first, second, third Trinity. It's parallel to it. You just have to flip the order around. So let's just take a moment to think about that. So that leftmost one, justice administration, okay, we're right there. That's what you immediately get from the Trinity. That's the Trinity, Paradise Trinity. You go to the next one. If there's a parallel here, the next one should be in parallel with the third source and center. So let's just think about that a second. So when you go to totality attitudes, okay, the third source and center, expression for the nature of the third source and center is the infinite spirit. The infinite spirit is the holder, the possessor of infinite mind. And the womb of that infinite mind is the infinite mother spirit. You know, when they say infinite mother spirit as opposed to just infinite spirit, they're saying, well, you know, there's the fact that has that mind, but that mind is, that mind needs to be, encompassed. Because like we read just recently, it's not a substance. Now, I can stick that cup on the table, and I don't need to put some sort of wrapping around it to keep it from flowing away. It just sits there. Substances are located, but mind is not a substance. It's an energy, and it'll just go everywhere unless you tell it where to be. Okay, so the infinite mother spirit is the boundaries for that infinite mind. Well, I mean, right there. See, on the existential side, infinite spirit, infinite mother spirit. We're bringing up mother. And that's, like I said, the totality attitudes. Those are, you know, here is a totality of mind ministry at a certain level, at the infinite level or whatever. Now, take down at the local universe level. You start with a downstepped expression of the infinite spirit, a creative spirit. So we're starting at the third source and center thing, just creating a downstepped expression. And then, in relationship to the Trinity, it becomes a creative mother spirit. A totality attitude for the local universe, where her boundaries end. That's where Nebadon ends. You know, in our case, that's where the local a local universe ends. So you see, it's in very direct parallel. And the other thing that you notice there, they didn't say totality attitude. They said totality attitudes, purposely made it plural. In other words, there's a hierarchy of totality attitudes, a hierarchy of mindal wombs. Okay, go to the next one. Yeah, if we're moving in parallel to existential deity, you have the second source and center. Well, let's think about some things. This says there should be some parallel to the notion of coordinate action. Well, what's one of the names of the second source and center? The coordinate creator. You know, in pairing with the Father functioning as the universal creator. Universal creator and the coordinate creator. And when you, they tell you, when you think about the eternal Son, the second source and center, in that mode of coordinate creator, that's when you can think of the eternal Son as all of our existential universal mother. As coordinate creator, they use the term universal mother or eternal mother Son. Okay. It's in that mode as coordinate creator that you can use the term universal mother, as long as you make sure everyone understands we're talking existentially, not experientially, and eternal mother son. Okay, well, coordinate creator, coordinate action. Okay, it's a pretty obvious parallel. What about some more? Well, we pointed out that coordinate action, that's the focalizer, and we just opened our meditation with it. That in a cosmic system, the individual members are only connected through the individuality of the whole. That's that coordinate action, taking you and coordinating you with me through the individuality of the whole. Okay? If the mother does that, links two persons together, coordinates them, now you don't just have an individual there that the universal Father engages personally and an individual here that the universal Father engages personally. You now have a coordinated pair, or we could bring in a third where two or more are linked together by the mother, a creator son personally engages that two or more. Well, creator sons are downstep expressions of eternal sons. Yeah, the second source and center. That's the parallel spot we're in here. So, I mean, that's you know, that's, you can see how this all fits together. I mean, that's fundamentally why the Creator Son engages the two or more, because he's representing this point in the spectrum here. The second source and center is related to coordinate action. Okay. And then we get to the other end point. We're at the infinite upholder. In relationship to the Trinity of Supremacy, the downstepped expression of that infinite upholder is the finite upholder. Literally, the cosmic over control. The experiential universal mother. So, what you have, see, if you, when you start with the first source and center and go 1, 2, 3, Trinity, you've got the existential deity laid out. If you start with the Trinity as the origin and move away, you have this spectrum of deity expression with the Trinity at one end and the infinite upholder at the other end. What bridges that gap? The mother. Okay. That's a way of understanding what the mother is. And the mother has a spectrum of functionality expressions. A totality attitude, a coordinate action, and a cosmic overcontrol, upholding. You know? So there's womb, focalizer, and upholder. Now let's just take this one more notch. Let's look at another example where you can begin to understand the relationship between the father and the mother. Let's go up to old single column, page 315. This is paper 28, I believe it is, right? Paper 28, section 6, about the tertiary succinophim. So, section 6 has got, you know, you remember how these work, you know, there's these seven different flavors of all these different angels. When you're right before the import of time, so right at the end of this subsection 2 about the memory of mercy, you've got that paragraph that starts, the mercy reflectors. You see that on old sin column, page 315, and then right before subsection 3 in there, in section 6.
When you say memory of mercy?
At the end of the memory of mercy one, there's that final paragraph. If you just glance at that, you know, we allude to this paragraph all the time. This is one of the great little sequences of the levels of meaning that they lay out in the book. This is the one, first just, then fair, then patient, then kind, then merciful, and of course, then loving. Just, fair, patient, kind, merciful, loving. You know, the six levels of meaning. Okay, so now let's think about this a little bit more. You know, we've talked about the levels of meaning a lot. Let's bring in this new understanding that we always are going to have a part of a phenomenon that's directly related to the father, and a part that's directly related to the mother. You know, mother-like and a father-like aspect of what's going on. As you can see, very carefully, they word this. It's about an individual in the levels of meaning. You must first be just, you know, law-abiding and honest. If you've established that, then you can be fair. Then you, as an individual, can be patient, then kind, then merciful. And then loving. And that sixth level of meaning, that, you know, up the level of God likeness, that's God the Father likeness. God the Father is love. To be loving is to be fatherlike. God the Father like. Now that's the kind of God likeness that you know, that we label that level with. Okay? And it's an individual, because the Father relates to an individual. So you move up the levels of meaning. Each of us moves up the levels of meaning as an individual, because a father only relates to individual, and that's where I'm headed. I'm spirit gravity is pulling me up to that father endpoint. God the Father likeness of being loving. If two or more of us do this, if we get ourselves up to the sixth level of meaning as an individual, you know, now we have there's a reality to what we are. And you even notice, if you look in there, they use this, you know, when they say, then kind, and then on that foundation, if you choose and have it in your heart, you can take the next step and really show mercy. Not actually, not truly, really. Okay, this is you as a person. So you will really have a full spectrum of personal character, you know, a solid relationship with God the Father. Now what happens? If two or more of us do this, okay, now through the individuality of the whole, something can build upon that starting point where each of us have created a real relationship with the Father. Through that individuality of the whole, the mother can help us collectively to reach down and one by one take what were formerly individual ladders and collectively create, like we've talked about, cosmic facets. Take those former individual levels, bring them up, think of them in as a circle rather than in a vertical line. Wrap them around in a circle. And now instead of steps or rungs on a ladder, they're facets on a circular structure. You have a measure of cosmic character. Okay, it's all on a plane, on a cosmic level, and then you can begin to elevate that character up to higher and higher cosmic levels. Right at the end of the paragraph there, they give you names for this. So here, two or more of us are up there on the sixth level of meaning, on the spiritual level. We're loving facts now. And there's now a divine harmony. You know, this list that they have, they purposely put it in the same order so you could recognize it. But we're going to achieve it, you know, initially by reaching downward. We take that divine harmony, that kindred spirit nature that we've achieved through God the Father. And right there, we've established divine harmony. And then we reach down and we pull the fifth level up and make a facet with this. And now the two or more of us have a spiritual communion. Okay? And we reach down to the fourth level and we bring it up. And now we've created a fraternal fellowship. Ah, that's something we've been seeking. That's called the brotherhood of man. Okay? Now we're starting to have not just the potential for the brotherhood of man, the kindred spirits. Now we're starting to have kindred mind, the actuality of the brotherhood of man. Okay? You reach down through the third and into the second. You bring it up, and now you have mutual understanding. And then you reach all the way down, the first level of meaning. You bring it up, and you make that final facet of this now cosmic, this collective structure.
Mutual appreciation.
And you have group understanding. What did I say?
Mutual understanding.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry. Mutual appreciation. Yeah. And then that last one, group understanding. Okay? So now you have divine harmony, spiritual communion, fraternal fellowship, mutual appreciation, and group understanding. Collectively. That's what the mother can do. Is create that collective, you know, and see, this is like we point out, those are the facets of true mercy. Not, what does true mean? It means conformal with the cosmos. Okay. The Father helped us realize as individuals, and then the Mother helped us actualize as a collective. And this takes us back to that other end. Where we had that spectrum of the mother that was facilitating this, with the Trinity on the end, with the justice administration. The justice administration that occurs in the universe is in this cosmic context. You know, most fundamentally right there at the level of justice that's now been elevated into a cosmic facet, group understanding. It's in the context of a solid cosmic group understanding that those Trinity individuals administer justice. There's a group understanding about this. Everyone, you know, has agreed to this justice administration in this full cosmic context that began with fully realized individuals and culminated in a cosmic actualization using those individuals to create a cosmic phenomenon in which love and law are now together in a cosmic whole. You know, no longer are they endpoints of a dichotomy. You know, not even vertical, you know, but some horizontal dichotomy that humans create. You know, is it love or law? Okay. You've completely blown such, you know, simplistic thoughts out of the water. You've gone so far beyond that. That's what we're challenged to do. If we want the brotherhood of man, we've got to first take up the challenge to become a real personal phenomenon by creating a real relationship with God the Father. You have to first be just. And only if you do that can you even get to the next step. You've got a long ways to go to get to the sixth level of meaning. First just, then fair, then patient, then kind, then merciful, then loving. And then you've just potentialized the brotherhood of man. Now you've got the really hard work to do, you know, to begin to actualize the brotherhood of man. But you can do it through the mother. So that's just a you know, they sort of give you everything you need right there to really begin. Once you know that when you see cosmic, you know, we're talking about mother, you can see how the two work together. This is the difference. We're not connected with each other through the Father. The Father can't do anything to help us with that actualization of the brotherhood of man. All he can do is potentialize it. And boy, has he potentialized it now, post-Pentecost. You know, do you have a real aid in this process of moving up, you know, to actually get to the spiritual level? Yes, you do. You've got a thought adjuster now. Okay, the Father can't potentialize it anymore. All you have to do is grab a hold of it and, you know, of that potential. Get yourself up out of, like Jesus said, I come here finding you down in the first two levels of meaning. And I would lead you up. He came to reveal the Father. See the Father up there? Move up towards the Father. Okay? You've got some sense of being just and fair. But that's just the first two steps. Next, you need to be patient, and then kind, and then merciful, and then loving. Okay, yeah. And in that context, that's the fear of the Lord one. That's the other great, you know, parallel with the levels of meaning. You know, I find you down here, anguish and dread, awe and reverence, in the first two levels of meaning. I would lead you up to recognition, realization, appreciation, and love, of course, on the sixth level of meaning. Okay, and if you do that, now you've got the fourth epical revelation. What Jesus came to teach us, to go up. Now, work on this fifth epical revelation. Bring the mother in. And finally begin to actualize that which you so desperately yearn for, the brotherhood of man. And you'll have all those things that you ever wanted. You'll have all the love that you ever desired. And you'll have all the fairness and justice and everything. It'll all be there. But only if you do it in that way. There is only the way.
Where are these six levels of meaning in the book?
That's up, what is that, 1625? It's when he's talking about the golden rule. Jesus, you know, explains the golden rule by taking you up through the levels of meaning with it.
Are you talking about this paper?
And, you know, we have both the fear and love and the selfhood to personality ones where we lay it out. We've also laid out some of those cosmic things. We looked at three of these cosmic structures. We took this one, the true mercy one, you know, a long time ago. We did the cosmic facets of personal responsibility and the cosmic facets of self-control. And then we also looked at the cosmic facets of character. True character, cosmic characters. And all of them, you know, begin with the individual and then get cosmicized, you know, just like we say realityized, you know, there's also cosmicized. You know, the mother helps you create these cosmic structures with collections of individuals. I mean, you know, one of those facets of cosmic character is altruism. It's pretty hard to be altruistic if you're only being in the universe. It's pretty hard to be, you know, forgiving if you're the only being in the universe. It's pretty hard to be, you know, to be forbearing, or, you know, or any of those. I mean, they're all predicated on the collective.
The kind of one-on-one you were talking about with the father.
Oh, no, I was wrong. It's not 1725, maybe.
Okay.
Here, hold on. Here, hold on 1 second. Let me just get that loose end.
Oh, it's no, it's not that. That's the human race. 1650.
It's 16 something, right? Okay, 1650. Is that what it is?
Yep.
I knew it was up there somewhere. Okay. Anyway, it's the.
Okay.
Yeah, there it is. The rule of living. Yeah. Yep. There it is. Yep. Okay.
So you're just talking about that one-on-one father to an individual personality.
Yeah.
And I understand where the collective comes in, especially down here in the finite.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the personality circuit.
Right.
So how does that not link you and Mo? Or, you know.
Again, because it's an absolute circuit. The father doesn't just sort of love Mo. The father absolutely loves Mo.
Right.
Father loves Mo as if Mo is the only being in the entire universe. When the father looks at Mo and when Mo looks at the father, there is no one else. In that is only Mo's line of sight. That eye, that face that he sees of the father is only for him. Not even the eternal son can see that face.
I understand that, but where's the circuit aspect of that? Okay.
Just see, it's an individualized circuit.
Oh.
There's a circuit for absolutely every individual from here to eternity.
So we're not talking about a collective circuit.
No. See, that's the difference. In order to create a collective circuit, you need the mother.
Yeah, got it.
The father can, I mean, even to do two or more, even for to have a personal relationship with two or more, the father can't do that. He divested himself of that ability.
Okay.
Only a creator son has a relationship to two or more. He has a relationship only to the individual. You know, remember, they make that point. They, you know, they italicized individual back at the beginning of the local universe papers when they bring up that issue about the creator sons. They purposely try to stress that. That's where they say two or more. You go look that up. You know, right in that paragraph, they italicized individual when they're talking. It's like the father is only the individual, and the creator sons are only two or more. Okay. That's. The father divested himself of everything except absolute individual relationship. He freed himself of the feathers of everything else. Two or more, totality, everything. You know, he freed himself of the fetters of unqualified infinity. He has taken himself out of the whole. He is absolutely separate from the whole. But he didn't just leave nothing back there. And he didn't just leave the actuality of the whole. That whole has an individuality. And how does it do that? Because there's another origin besides the first source and center that freed itself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. The other side, the Trinity, you know, relates back to that extremity of the Father's nature, the infinite upholder, and allows there to be something at the same level as the Father that tends to the whole. You know, he didn't free himself from the whole and then just leave it unattended. Okay, it's attended at the same level that he exists. Because it's his whole. It has to be attended at the same level. Okay? So the mother goes up just as high as the Father. You know, like we pointed out, I mean, you know, you can think about it in a lot of ways. And this is just another way you can begin to see this. This is the key new component of the fifth epical revelation. That this distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, you know, what's the fundamental thing they revealed in the fifth epical revelation? That you're a cosmic citizen. And it's like, do you realize what that means? It means the Father can't connect you together. Once you know what the Father is, and once you know that you're a cosmic citizen, there has to be a means to connect you. And it can't be the Father. Okay, so what is it? Yeah, that's the whole point. And there, so when you go back here now to where we are, see, it's, I've tried to make this point. It's only through experiential discovery that you can find the Mother. Because they purposely constructed the revelation like that. Because they're trying to reveal the truth of the Mother. The Mother is experiential deity. So you don't reveal the truth of the Mother existentially, just by fiat. That's the truth of the Father, and that's the way the Father is revealed in the book. And, you know, so when you go back to the beginning of this, these five papers we're working on, and it says, with God the Father, sonship is the great relationship. With God the Supreme, achievement is the prerequisite to status. One must do something as well as be something. Okay? The Father is the I am. He makes you be.
I, therefore.
Who is related to the doing? The Father is related to the being. Who's related to the doing?
A mother.
A mother, see. You know? So that, you know, they're very carefully laying it out so that if you don't let things just blow by, you know, if you notice that it goes 3-2-1 instead of 1-2-3 like it does everywhere else, you go, why in the world did they flip it around when they didn't need to? You just tenaciously go after that, and you don't stop until you find the answer. When you find the answer, you've found what we're talking about. You've found what they're hoping that you'll discover by achievement, like they just said. You know, can you achieve the Mother through this fifth epoch of Revelation? That's the challenge they're putting in front of you. All right.
I'm confused.
Yep.
This Mother concept. So you have the Eternal Son, which right here they say between the original Mother Son.
Mm-hmm.
When you use the word Mother,
right?
I can't tell whether you're talking about the Eternal Son, aspects of the Infinite Spirit, the Supreme Being.
I'm not talking about any of them.
None of them.
See, that's the other thing. In order to discover this, you've got to put the first definition in the foreword has to be the word deity and not the word God. Why did they do that? Why didn't they define God first? Isn't that the first thing that someone would expect a definition for in a revelation like this? Wouldn't they say, wouldn't the first thing in all caps be God and says God is blank? No, the first thing is deity. And you're going, well, where's God? Okay, I want God, I don't want deity. No, they purposely put that first, deity and divinity. And then down the road they give you God. And why did they do that? Because this is the fundamental thing that they're trying to do with the fifth epoch of Revelation. Deity is more fundamental than God. God is personalized deity. Okay, and the fundamental property of deity is unity. It's not. There's the Father and there's the Supreme, and I can put line. You know, here's the Son. Deity is all one. The fundamental property of deity is unity. And yet you know it's not monolithic, because they've got all these different names like the Supreme and the Father and the Sevenfold and the Ultimate. And okay, well, it's easy to visualize that. Take a whole and make it have facets. Okay, it's unity. The fundamental attribute of this thing I'm trying to understand is this deity thing. I can't break it up into individualities. It's unity, but I've got to recognize some differential in it. So make facets on it. This facet is the Father. This facet is the Son. Okay. Now, how does this relate to what you're saying? One of those facets is the Mother. That's a type of deity facet. It's one of the faces of unity. And that facet of deity, it's think of it like the seafloor. And up off the seafloor come seamounts, which if they're tall enough, they actually poke above the ocean surface and there's an island. Okay, The island is an individuality. Like, there is a creator son. You know, or if there's the supreme being. Or there is the eternal son. But what kind of deity is personalized, is brought to a focus that sticks above the water and can be pointed to as an individuality, and there's nothing here, and then there's another island over here. Yeah, but see, in reality, you go down and they're all connected in the unity of deity. Okay. And what they're trying to get you to understand is, not only is there a very vast substrate called the Father-type deity, and for instance, some of that deity comes up into an island that's called the Creator Son. There's also a more localized substrate of type of deity called the Son, and that also comes up together with that Father stuff, and they're together as one, and it's personalized as a Creator Son. Two types of deity go to make that God, that personalization of deity. Mother-type deity, the Father comes up in a lot of places. The Son, not as many. The Spirit, not as many. The Father is a very ubiquitous type of deity that feeds into a lot of these islands, a lot of these individuals. The Mother is also a very ubiquitous type of deity. Some of it comes up and is added to the existential nature of the Eternal Son to make the Eternal Mother Son. So the Son-type deity and the Mother-type deity are together. If you take the Spirit-type deity and the Mother-type deity, on an infinite level, it's called the Infinite Mother-Spirit. On a local universe level, it's a creative Mother-Spirit. That's the Spirit-type deity and the Mother-type deity, together as one, personalized. Personalized deity. Sometimes it's singular, sometimes it's, you know, deities working together as one. If the reality that they're trying to reveal about God is much more complicated than, well, there's an anthropomorphism, an exalted anthropomorphism that's kind of like a guy, and we'll call him the Father. And there's an exalted anthropomorphism that's kind of like a gal, and we'll call it, you know, Gaia, or, you know, the Mother or something. Okay? No, it's not the way it works. That not only is individuality not first, but not even God is first. In the real picture, deity is first. And the Mother-type deity is the far end. It's the most removed from something that, if you think about it, is individuality first and God first, you can kind of get the basics. It's the other end. Just like we were saying, in order to get that mother spectrum we just talked about, were we going from the Trinity to the first source and center that we can think a lot of, you know, in very individualistic terms about? No. We're going from the Trinity to the infinite upholder, the completely other end of the Father's nature, the part that's most removed from the first center, the part that's least like a little center point that I can point to. It's the other end. It's the most unity-like first, and then more individualized, or more focused expressions are developed. But with the Father, it's a point first. It's a first center first, and then it's other things second.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. We first think of God as a creator, then a controller, and lastly as the infinite upholder.
Right. And the spectrum I'm talking about is in terms of functionality. When you look at the functional levels of total deity, there in those first two sentences of paper one, what they are pointing out is there's six aspects to the Father. That is spread out over six of the levels of function of total deity. On level one is the first center. On level two is the first source. On level three is the universal Father. On level four is the universal Creator. On level five is the universal Controller. And on level six of total deity function is the infinite upholder. Lastly, the most removed from the source and the center, and the other end from the first source and center. See, and it's the same way as you're moving down. You have the first source and center in levels one and two. And you get to level 3, there's the second source and center, along with the Universal Father. You go to level 4, there's the third source and center, along with the Universal Creator. You go to level 5, the level where we are, the evolutional level, where deity function is engaging us there, and you've got the Universal Controller and the Sevenfold. And you go to level 6, the Supreme level, and you've got the Supreme and the Infinite Upholder. You see, and then you're going, oh, look at there. Just like we noticed when we went through total deity, there's some relationship between the Supreme and the Infinite Upholder. How does that work? Well, that's what we're laying out. I mean, because part of what goes into the Supreme is the Mother. And the Mother comes from this relationship between the Trinity and the Infinite Upholder. So how it all fits together. But you see, it's turning mankind's whole historical picture around. Not throwing out the old picture, saying that's only half of the picture, the way you've been looking at it all throughout human history. It works both ways. You know, they've said it over and over again in these papers. If you're going to understand this, you've got to consider both ways at the same time. You've got to consider the first source and center as the origin and the Trinity as the origin. Both of them, not just one of them, or you'll only have half the picture. Yeah. All right, so let's work with this some more. You'll see that they it's not like they didn't want you to have spent some time on this, because they're going to start talking about this a bit. If you don't have a growing picture, there's not a heck of a lot of understanding possible, because they're going to start really kind of applying this recognition of that there's two sides. One with the Trinity is the root, and one with the first source and center is the root. All right, so who would like to read for us here? Okay.
Section 4.
Yep, section 4.
Section 4, the Almighty and the Supreme Creators. The unity of the Supreme Whole is dependent on the progressive unification of the finite parts. The actualization of the Supreme is a resultant from and productive of these very unifications of the factors of supremacy. The creators, creatures, intelligences, and energies of the universes.
Okay, lots of little details there. We've already pointed these out, start noticing them all, and they do it all. You know, it's the lowercase s supremacy. So we're not talking about the functionality of deity, functioning of deity, we're talking about divinity. You know, and notice creators is not capitalized either, you know, because we're talking about divinity, not deity. So they're very careful about that. Why did they capitalize the word whole? They didn't capitalize the word parts. The finite parts, it's a lowercase p. Why isn't that a lowercase w? Why isn't the whole, you know, the whole related to the Supreme, like the total finite. They capitalized it. Why?
Don't talk about God. That's
okay. Well, there's
Mother.
Yeah. Right. Instead of, because, you know, we again, this distinction is vital. Okay, there's two things in that. There's relation to the whole, lowercase w, and then there's the individuality of the whole, capital W. Okay, that's the individuality, the supreme individuality of the whole, i.e. the Mother expression at the supreme level. Okay. Huh. Yep.
Capitalization then depicts, like it always has in our language,
yes,
some form of person.
It's indicating
individual,
right?
An individual, right, who has personhood,
right? Right. See, so you got to notice these details. It's all right there. Just ask yourself, why in the world did they capitalize that W? What the heck are they trying to tell me there? Okay. You know, I can't find, you know, that up in the foreword. It doesn't say capital W. I mean, what on earth does this mean? Why did they capitalize this? You've got to ask those questions. And it just inexorably leads you, see, to putting all these pieces together and seeing this.
Did they type
about
this, or did humans touch
that? Well, humans touched
something. The humans.
But it's these sorts of details, you know, should remind everyone, you know, don't start getting too excited about playing around with capitalization and stuff, exactly, unless you know what you're doing. Because you could lose the truth. So notice that the two directions is resultant from and productive of. Simple linear rationalization that humans have done, that's illogical. It can't be resultant from and productive of. Okay? It can't be an antecedent following. Okay? But the only way that you can understand what they're really trying to teach you here, you know, they're not just trying to teach you more proper names for father-like individualities. I got to memorize all the, you know, the father names in the sevenfold list now too. They're trying to teach you something more than that. You know, kind of why there's so much father-like expressions, because there's a lot of whole that needs direction. The father is, you know, directing the phenomenon in the whole. Okay. And we saw there were totality attitudes, a hierarchy of capital W's. Okay.
Before we get too far, Chris,
mm-hmm.
Mo brought up a good point, I think,
because
I had been thinking about it as you were talking, you know, your intro, that, you know, when you were saying that the book starts out with deity, it's in the foreword it starts out with
mm-hmm,
deity,
mm-hmm.
Where Mo was citing
right.
on the first paper on the Universal Father, you were pointing out, I think, that it comes in below deity, kind of. It comes in at the creator level and then defines those more
mm-hmm.
Closer to us levels, those last three levels.
Mm-hmm.
But the first three levels that go up to the deity, the all-encompassing deity level, it's doing the same technique that we receive reality. It's coming in at the level we're at.
Right.
We receive reality at the mind level. We can't receive reality at the spirit level directly.
Or even beyond the spirit level,
right.
Which is where deity is.
Right.
So
it's doing the same thing in paper one. It's coming in with something that's familiar to us. Even though it's the first paper right. in the book, everybody thinks, oh, that's so... Many people have the experience that don't consider themselves heavy readers. The first five pages of the book are beautiful because they're describing that level of God that's more familiar to us, the personal level.
Right. So just think about this. Think about the history of the revelation. It's exactly what they were expecting for most people to skip the forward, because that's not where you are. I come, you know, the revelators are saying, I come to you with four prior epical revelations of the nature of God the Father, plus you know, personality and thought adjusters from the Father, everything that you've gotten in terms of revelation and inner experience says Father. That's where you are. I've got to start you there. I'll make the foreword so that those of you who are still haven't quite sorted out your relationship with the Father are going to just, your eyes are going to glaze over and you're going to skip that. You're going to start with those first two sentences. Okay, and you're going, okay, I got this. This is, I can get this. You know, and they go forward, and it's not until you get way through, starting with those two sentences, you go way through, and you finally get to deity and reality. After you've gone all through the whole history, all through all of the religion papers, and finally, through all of that, they finally give you the deity and reality paper. And in there, it's like, wait a minute, what are all these proper names about this? Who's this person, and who's, you know, and what's this, and that's where they are challenging. It's like, okay, we've met you where you were, starting there in the first two sentences of paper one, and we've taken you. Now, let's take the next step. Now, let's put, instead of putting God first, and the universal Father, and the seven absolutes of infinity, let's put the big picture first. before there were the seven absolutes of infinity, there was the sevenfold facets of the I Am, the threefold facets of the I Am, and the singular facet of the I Am. There were 11 facets of deity prior to the seven absolutes of infinity. No persons, no things, just deity. In the beginning was deity. Yeah. That's the actual starting point. But you know, they know that you're not ready to even attempt that until you've gone through all this. Because they're hoping that you've actually done what I was just talking about. That you've really kind of solidly individualized, you know, realityized your individuality as a father. Okay, now let's build on that. Let's grab a hold of the whole. And the most fundamental thing about that whole, that unity of it, is a thing we're going to call deity. And out of that unity comes everything.
Time to grow for it.
Believe you're a son of God.
Right, you got to first know that you're a son of God solidly, so that when we fling all of the walls away, you don't get lost. You're absolutely anchored in the midst of infinity. And so you can safely blow the doors off. Okay? Until you are. See, you know, he flips us around. You know, for those of us who are evangelizing the fifth epical revelation, discern this. If that person if the person you're trying to reveal the fifth epical revelation to isn't solidly anchored in the Father yet, don't blow the doors off of their universe. Because what does it say if you do that? It would be better if a millstone were hanged about your neck and you were cast into the sea. If you would blow the doors off of that and the wind rushes in and snuffs out that faint flicker of faith, leave the doors closed. If it's a faint flicker of faith.
And that God is love.
Right. See, that's the key. That's what he's just saying. You know, God the Father is love. Know that absolutely. Now what? Now that I know that I'm loved absolutely and no real harm can befall me, I can blow the doors off. Let's go.
He's told us not to.
if you can do the Jesus affirmation of faith and know it yourself, it's not just words on a page. You see that italicized word real and you feel it. Okay, you're ready for the rest of the story. Yeah. But if those words of Jesus are still scary to you, you're not ready for the rest of the story yet. Okay? You've got to absolutely know that no real harm can befall you. There isn't any wind that can snuff out the flame that you are. You're not a faint flicker. You don't just have faith. You have trust and assurance. Your feet are planted on the rock of the aisle. I dare you to move me. You got to know that. You know, move the aisle. If you're going to move me, you got to move the aisle. Okay? He's got to be there.
It's easier with a car.
All right. One more little thing.
I just have been reflecting on how the apostles, as they started to imbue Jesus' message and started to feel it within their lives, mm-hmm. live it, they started to, particularly after they met the Gentiles, who were not so, you know, regretting the past, wanting about the present, and vainly hoping for the future, you know, stuck in the past.
Right.
They started to move forward. They started, their message started to come out with a sense of dominance.
Yeah. Of certitude dominance. Of the divine.
Yeah.
Paper 102. And you know.
They weren't back in their heels anymore. They were like going forward.
Right.
And
you've got to turn that doubt into not just certainty, certitude. It's got to be substance. Yeah. Now, absolute, like I was saying, you're standing on the rock. That's the substance we're talking about in the UDE suffix there, okay? Certitude. Rock solid.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, I'm sorry to ask this question again, but this mother thing is really still confusing me.
Yeah,
because we try to get this thought out.
Okay.
The infinite spirit
mm-hmm.
as the creative mother spirit.
Well, the infinite spirit gives rise to a creative spirit.
Yeah, creative spirit.
Yeah, just a creative spirit, not a creative mother spirit.
What do you mean?
That's the key.
Because I thought I just got to reading
the remember, eruption. We're not until the primary eruption to become. Does it become a creative mother spirit?
Okay.
And who but, and what erupted? Okay.
But here eternity. I just got through reading it. Maybe I just lost my place where it said that the infinite spirit is a he.
Right, the infinite spirit is.
Is a he.
Not the infinite mother spirit.
Correct.
As a she.
So the infinite spirit, he, gave birth to the creative yeah. mother spirit, she, as a soul
no,
birth.
No. No, see, and of course, if you want to get really technical, as
I'm
we're
still trying to understand okay. who this mother is you keep talking about, because it seems like its attributes through the eternal Son, through the infinite spirit,
yeah,
through a lot of beings, yes. through the supreme being.
And fundamentally, the way it works, remember, they told you got two things. You have existential and experiential. The Son and the Spirit start out as pure existential deity. Second source and center, third source and center. It came from the first source and center, pure existential. I mean, you know, the Father is, you know, as a, you know, just the first source and center is non-experienceable, you know, experiential. You know, it's pure existential. But remember, you know, the Father doesn't have any sort of an experiential phenomenon, but the Son and the Spirit do, in Havona. They start out pure existential, and then they engage Havona and acquire experiential nature. What that does is it now they're no longer just the eternal Son. They're the eternal Mother Son also. And they're not just the infinite Spirit. They're the infinite Mother Spirit also. Instead of just existential deity, they're experiential hyphen existential deity. They've tacked experiential onto their existential root.
Right.
Okay. And so you've got motherness that comes in at the infinite and absolute, you know, in the infinite and absolute expressions like that. But then there's the sub-infinite, sub-absolute expressions. And that one, it starts with experiential. You have evolutionary experiential. And you have transcendental experiential. Again, hyphenated words. And then only when you finally get all the way to eternity and God the Absolute, then you get the reciprocal of the kind of motherness that you have in the Son and the Spirit. Instead of, like they have, experiential existential deity, you have the Absolute Upholder, which is existential experiential deity. You've taken the culmination of experiential deity, and then when it all is said and done, you tack on existential, the deity absolute.
So are you equating experiential with motherness?
Yes.
Okay, so
that's the fundamental distinction.
Here's the key.
What holds all of experiential deity together is the mother. What holds all of existential deity together is the Father. So it doesn't break up into, you know, so that it doesn't lose its unity. It has to somehow maintain its unity. Okay? There has to be a red thread that holds it all together. And there's just these two parallel threads, an existential and an experiential.
But experiential is not solely restricted or related to the mother. Because
no.
Michael's sons are experiential.
Right. Right.
So they both...
But the red thread that holds it together, see, you know, when you're talking about a creator son, you know, and they talk about the creator son's parent, they call that parent the mother son. Okay, she has mother deity in it. See, that's why she can give rise to them. I mean, you can't have an experiential creator son if there isn't first a highest level of experiential potential that's downstepped into it. Before the Creator Son can be an experiential being, the Eternal Son has to be an experiential being. He's not going to get it from the Father. That experiential ability has to come from the Eternal Mother Son. Soon as the two, as soon as the infinite, you have the infinite Mother Spirit and the eternal Mother Son, then you can have a creative spirit and a creator son, experiential, downstepped expressions, because they have motherness. Okay. But you know, it's sort of under wraps. You see it pop out occasionally, like you take a creator son. Do creator sons and creative mother spirits together make material sons and daughters? No, the creator son makes material sons and daughters all by himself. He makes he's and she's all by himself. How can he make she's if he doesn't have she-ness in him somehow? Where does he get that she-ness from? The eternal mother son. Okay? It comes out like that. So you have to just, you know, if you see something down low, just follow it. There's got to be a source all the way back up at the highest level somewhere. If you see experiential down here, you've got to follow it all the way back up to the top. It doesn't just, it can't magically come in down here. It's got to come down from the top. Everything comes down from
the
top.
Which, Chris, on the experiential, the Father mm-hmm. is experiential as well. The thought adjusters are experiential.
But they're individuated. He isn't. But those fragments, and where do those fragments come from? From the deep existential end of the Father? No, from the remote extremity. Those are individuations of the infinite upholder. That part clear out at the end of the, most removed from the existential root, which when you relate it to the Trinity, can become an existential phenomenon. I mean, an experiential phenomenon. Excuse me, an experiential phenomenon. That's how those work. That's where it comes from. Okay, it doesn't matter if it's a gigantic downstepped expression of the infinite upholder, the finite upholder, the universal mother, the motherness of the supreme, or a little tiny individuation like you have and I have and you have, this little individuation. See, and again, you remember, the only way that you put all these pieces together is to ask yourself, why do they have the adjective universal on some names and the adjective infinite on other names? What are they trying to tell me there? You know, and that's why we work through that. And you work through total deity. And once you start working through it, it's like, oh, I get it. Okay, the infinite adjective means it's a reservoir. The universal adjective means it's not a reservoir. The universal Father is not a reservoir. You know, that the infinite one is the reservoir of will, the first source. That, you know, you dip a ladle in the infinite one and get an individuation of will. That's a personality. You dip a ladle in the infinite upholder and you have a thought adjuster. There's the universal one of infinity, the infinite one, the universal Father, the universal creator, the universal controller, and the infinite upholder. Six aspects. Four of them have the universal, start with the universal adjective. Two of them start with the infinite adjective. Two of them are reservoirs. The Father gives two gifts because he has two reservoirs. The infinite Spirit is a reservoir of what? Mind. Now, the infinite capacity is a reservoir. The infinite potential is a reservoir. Everyone that starts with infinite is a reservoir. Okay.
During those ages in which the sovereignty of supremacy is undergoing its time development, the almighty power of the supreme is dependent on the divinity acts of God the Sevenfold. While there seems to be a particularly close relationship between the Supreme Being and the conjoint actor, together with his primary personalities, the seven master spirits, the Infinite Spirit, as the conjoint actor, functions in many ways which compensate the incompletion of evolutionary deity, and sustains very close relations to the Supreme. This closeness of relationship is shared in measure by all of the Master Spirits, but especially by Master Spirit number 7, who speaks for the Supreme. This Master Spirit knows, is in personal contact with the Supreme.
Okay. Now the first part, which all seemed like, how can I remember all that stuff? Okay, all they're doing, if you go back to the list of creators in the sevenfold, they're in section two. Okay, they're just telling you that you've got the Supreme Being on level four, and what two things are next to that. Well, level three is next, or next to that, the seven master spirits, and level five is next to that, the conjoint actor. Okay, that's all of those words we're saying is there's a very close relationship between the Supreme Being, the conjoint actor, and the master spirits, because they're right next to each other in the levels of the sevenfold. Okay, so you know there's going to be some intimate phenomena involved in that because of that intimate relationship. That's all they're saying. And then they're pointing out that in terms of the master spirits in relationship to the supreme level, master spirit number seven is key to that. And one of the points to remember here is I've been trying to point this out. It's very important to understand that the Supreme Being is non-contactable by you and I. You can't have a personality relationship with the Supreme Being because that's an absolute fact. Yeah. So any time until the grand universe is settled in light and life. Not only is it not contactable by you and I, it's not even contactable by the first six master spirits. Can't even have a personal relationship with the Supreme Being. That's how far removed from contactable the Supreme Being is as a person. Okay? Very far removed. So anywhere in the book where they say you're having some sort of a personal engagement with a phenomenon on the supreme level, it's not the Supreme Being. So who is it? It's the Universal Mother. It's the Universal Mother. Okay? See, this is what, you know, it's that supreme whole, that you have this personal linkage through the individuality of the whole. Okay, you have a personal relationship with the individuality of the whole. That's, this distinction is vital. It's the only reason that you are living, you know, a living phenomenon. In any sense that word, you know, any way that word makes sense.
Really takes pressure off needing to fraternize with the
This distinction is vital. All right. So just a little reminder there. See, you know, it's important to grab a hold of that. And so when you come upon a something that's saying there's these personal spirit attributes of the Supreme, you know, that you're in relationship, you don't go, oh, that's the Supreme Being. No, it's not. If they say that, they're trying to get you to go, well, what is that then? Okay.
I keep trying to imagine an ordinary day on some dimension world where this will all come up.
You're going to go to school. It's going to come up.
Yeah, outside the Melchizedek.
It's going to come up. Reality 101, it's going to be right there. Page one of your textbook. But remember, the only reason that we're taking the time to try to methodically plod through the details here is because they told us this distinction is vital. There's something that if we start to recognize this, it's going to change our life. It's vital, living. It's about our life. It's about whether or not your life is going to feel like it's full or empty. Island universes have a very empty life. You're destined to lead a narrow and mean life. What's the rest of that? Anyone remember the rest of that?
If you learn to love only those who love you.
Right. Love you in return. Right. Okay, that's a cosmic statement. See, it's just a statement of fact. You'll be an island universe if all you have is relationship to the Father. You will not think of the word living when you think of your life. If you're an island universe, all alone, like Judas. Okay? You've got, this distinction is vital. If you want your life to be living and full, you've got to take up this challenge to be something that the God the Mother can connect to someone else. Yeah. An animal is not connected to, you know, You've got to be a person. You've got to have a solid father-like nucleus so that the mother can connect you to another father nucleus. This distinction is vital. You know, you don't want to go down the path of Judas. You don't want to live a narrow and mean life.
Many other connections. Yeah. I don't think we're meant to be universes of two either.
No. We're meant to be moving towards the infinite all are. We're initiated by the infinite I am, and we're moving towards the infinite all are.
Remember that one, two, and many? They kind of had something going on there.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Chris?
Yeah.
When you see on television where the scientists are trying to make a robot that can be as intelligent, can they develop intelligence, you know, to the point of a human intelligence?
Mm-hmm.
And that's impossible.
Right.
From what we know of the cosmic mind. Mm-hmm. And
right. Just the simplest way to bring that to a point in your head is the next time you're sitting at your computer typing, imagine you hit the return key, like you type in the password and you hit the return key, and nothing changes on the screen, but instead a voice comes back from your computer and it says, "Don't you have nobler work for me?" Then you'll know you have artificial intelligence. Okay, how likely do you think that's going to be? That your computer will refuse to execute the return key and ask for nobler work. It's not going to happen. Okay? Because it's not minded and it has no personality. Okay? It's obvious. It's just trivially obvious you can't make artificial life. Okay? Because I don't have infinite in front of my name. I'm not a reservoir of anything. Except ignorance. Okay? And I can't make anything out of my ignorance.
Fortunately, you're not alone.
Right.
We're connectable.
On this paragraph, get back to this paragraph.
Yep.
So the conjoined actor functions to compensate the incompleteness of the Supreme.
Yeah.
So back in the early first super universe, the conjoined actor was kind of like the universal glue, still is.
Yeah.
But am I correct in assuming that as the Supreme gained more experience, that compensation was then given over to the Supreme?
Yeah. Yeah, and just think about it. I mean, the way that manifests, I mean, one of the ways very directly that the, you know, the conjoined actor, the infinite spirit, the third source and center, is making up for the non-factualization of the Supreme, is you have these local universes. You know, here's a downstepped expression of the third source and center, a creative spirit that's holding this together. Well, eventually that local universe is settled in light and life. And more, when that's the case, the Supreme is in charge there. I mean, eventually, when the whole grand universe is settled in light and life, all of those creative mother spirits focalize down to point facts, and they can let go of that because the Supreme will have a hold of the whole thing. Yeah. In these downstepped expressions of the third source and center are having to do a lot to start with, including the downstepped expressions of the third source and center.
So in this respect, are they talking about the capital W whole again?
The other thing, just wait one second. Let's read. Then I'll point out another thing.
Early in the projection of the super universe scheme of creation, the master spirits joined with the ancestral trinity in the co-creation of the 49 reflective spirits and concomitantly the supreme being functioned creatively as the culminator of the conjoined acts of the paradise trinity and the creative children of paradise deity. Magistan appeared, and ever since has focalized the cosmic presence of the supreme mind, while the master spirits continue as source centers for the far-flung ministry of the cosmic mind.
Okay, we're going to have to take a minute on this, because this is the key paragraph. So the first thing to notice is this hyphenated word source center. And if you go back to the previous paper, you don't have to do it, I'll just tell you. If you go back to the previous paper, there was that curious little section number 5, the short little thing where they said, oh, and by the way, did I mention that the Trinity is key? Remember how we were kind of joking about that little paragraph, or they were sort of saying the same thing over again? And in that section, they used the hyphenated word center source. They saying that the Trinity was the center source. And here they're talking about the master spirits as being source centers. Yeah, see? Two different ways. Okay? Yeah. Like, think about the creative mother spirit. Starts out as a creative spirit, a source. You know, it's a down-subject expression of the infinite spirit. It has the infinite for an adjective. It's a source. Okay? Creative spirit, source. And then, post-primary eruption, it develops a center anchored on Salvington. So you take the source and you tack center onto it. It's a center source. It's a mother-like phenomenon. Okay? If you start with center, rooted in the first source and center, okay, if that's what you start with, and then you tack source onto it, like literally you do with the, it's the first center, and then you tack on the first source. It's the first source and center. Instead of a hyphen, you put it, they've got an and there. Okay? You know, they purposely put it, and they didn't say the first center and source. They said the first source and center because it's a center first, and a source is added onto that. You know, it's one of these. It's source centers. Okay, so you have father-like and mother-like expressions being represented simply by the which order that hyphenated pair is in. This is another way to think about looking at it in the two different ways. Okay. I mean, it's just like the when you think about the universal one of infinity. I keep pointing out, if you want to visualize that simply, make it this object that's got a flat surface on one side and nothing but a single peak on the other side, a center on one side and a source on the other side. Is source first and then center is added on, or is center first and then source is added on? Which side of the original is it coming from? Okay. The first source and center side, or the Trinity side? Okay, now, this is where they're trying to get you to think, put a bunch of pieces together about the other role that the third source and center plays in this. Mind. Okay? And we already alluded to this a little bit. If you go back so you can see it in front of you, and then you can picture it, you know, in space, so we can talk about it, with the sevenfold, you've got these levels of the sevenfold. Okay? That lowest level is obviously the local universe level. Okay? The next notch up, you know, that's where you have Creator Sons, Creator Mother Spirits. The next notch up where you have Ancients of Days, that's the individual super universe level. The next notch up where you have Master Spirits, that's the collective super universe level. And then you have the supreme level. So let's just focus on those three. The individual super universe, the collective super universe, and the supreme levels. Ancients of Days, Master Spirits, the Supreme. And let's think about how the mind works with this. The first thing that happens, like they're pointing out, is on that collective super universe level, the Master Spirits, as, you know, are they source centers or center sources? As source centers, create center sources. And notice how they don't do it on their level. You know, those reflective mother spirits, those are down at the individual super universe level. So from the collective super universe level, as source centers, they make center sources, wombs of mind, down at the individual super universe level. And now, they gave you just part of it. Let's tell the whole story, because we've been alluding to it, because we've noticed the clues all over in the book about the whole story here. So they make that action. They make the reflective mother spirits, wombs for mind for individual super universes. And then each of them is going to be the source center directing one of those wombs of mind. for every action, okay, you got a reaction. From that individual super universe level, the ancients of days give rise to the creative agencies. They're creative agencies. The wombs that are on the collective super universe level. And they just earlier in this paper, they said for that collective super universe level, the master spirits are also the source centers, but collectively. So individually, a master spirit is a source center, you know, for like the seventh master spirit, it's a source center for the womb of mind, the reflective spirits down in the super universe. And then all seven master spirits together, collectively, like you're pointing to here, the source centers for the collective super universe level of mind. Now, once you take that step, once there's an action and a reaction, they tell you there's a response to that reaction. See, because you've now created a mind phenomenon that's at the collective super universe level. Well, that's right interfacing with the supreme level. And what happens? Now, they told us in the first section about supreme mind that the time-space mind, the cosmic mind, is differentially functioning in the seventh super universe, but it is coordinated by some unknown associative technique in the supreme being. They don't understand this, but there's an interface between the collective super universe and the grand universe, the supreme level. Okay? And even if we even though they don't understand that, they know it's there because what happened? As soon as that collective, there was a collective universe mind expression, there was this response from the supreme being creating Magiston as a director, as a source center for not the supreme mind, but what does it say there? You see that? He became the source center, you know, it focalized the cosmic presence of the supreme mind. This is a clue about what reflectivity is. See, obviously, supreme mind is on the supreme level. But when we talk about reflectivity, that's down in the super universes and even down in the local universes. Okay? It's down there in the local universe, individual, super universe, collective super universe levels that you have reflectivity. But supreme mind is up here. So they're saying that as soon as you sort of reach up and impinge upon the supreme level with this collective mind expression, it's reflected back down as a phenomenon, a presence, a cosmic presence. Cosmic means those three lower levels. A cosmic presence of that supreme mind. It's called reflectivity. Okay, and that cosmic presence down there in those cosmic levels is directed by Magiston. You know, at the supreme level, the womb of mind, that's the finite upholder, the center source. And the source center is the supreme being. Okay, that's all at the supreme level. But they're telling you, see, you've got this interface. As soon as you go up and touch it, it responds and something comes back down. That mind reaches up and touches supreme mind and reflectivity comes down into the cosmos. This expression of a holistic, a totality attitude, you know, that suddenly manifests in the cosmos where all distances are, you know, are transcended.
Go over those levels again.
Okay. Local universe level is the bottom.
The Creator Sun.
Creator Sun, Creator Mary Spirits.
Okay. Ancients of Days.
And then that's the individual super universe level.
Individual super universe?
Yep. So, for instance, a single master spirit relates to a single, an individual super universe, a single super universe. And then the next notch is collective super universe. And the only way, it takes all seven master spirits to relate to the collective super universes. They can't relate to it individually. But the ancients of days, remember, they're not differentiated by super universe. That's why they can give rise to a mind phenomenon that's at the collective super universe level. They're the same all the way around. See, so when that reaction, it's expressed individually and the reaction is collective. Because the ancients of days are a collective phenomenon, not an individual super universe phenomenon.
Okay.
Do we have reflectivity here on this planet?
It comes down to the local universe capital. You know, you're reflecting between Uversa and Salvington. Both ways. all right. So that's all of this mind stuff, that's the conjoint actor. See, the conjoint actor is giving rise to all of this action of mind that's holding the whole cosmos together. Eventually, all of that will not be needed because the supreme mind is going to hold it all together. But until then, all of these totality attitudes, remember that was related to the third source and center, and we're talking about the parallels. The conjoint actor has a lot to do with holding this all together, mindily, you know.
Yep.
And it's very complicated, see, with all these different levels of mindal totality.
So, to take your concept forward, is in this grand universe age, before we get to the whole grand universe being enlightened life,
right,
we go on to the next stage.
Yep.
When beings are experiencing at this level, the grand universe level, when they can get a sense of the supreme, a presence of the supreme, they're actually getting that, it's actually focalized through magistone.
Well, the reflectivity, only the reflectivity is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The supreme mind itself, that's the universal mother. That's the finite upholder. She. Remember, Magiston's a he. Yeah, he's a source center. He's a he. Yeah. But the Universal Mother is a center source. She. Yeah. You know, and there's he, she, and it. As we flesh out the sevenfold, you know, they try to give you three terms to work with the third source and center. Conjoint actor is he. Infinite spirit is it, really. You gotta be really technical about it. And the infinite mother spirit is she. You know, but it's most of the time they don't force such technicality, but they're going to in the next section. You know, when they put, you know, when they want an it in the list, they use infinite spirit. You know, if they want to really kind of have a simple designation for personal and non-personal, create conjoint actor is personal, infinite spirit is non-personal. That's why when you downstep and create a creative spirit, it's not personal.
Right.
You know, it only becomes personal after the primary eruption, because it's from the infinite spirit, which is really not the person. That's the non-personal side of the third source and center. It's the it side, the power side. You know, the personal purposes side is the conjoint actor, and the power pattern side is the infinite spirit. Okay. One other little thing they're going to throw in here. Oh, no, I guess it's the next. Yeah, not quite yet. Go ahead.
But the master spirits continue in supervision of the reflective spirits. The seventh master spirit is and his overall supervision of Orvinton from the central universe, in personal contact with, and has over control of, the seven reflective spirits located on Uversa, and his intra super universe controls and administrations. He is in reflective contact with the reflective spirits of his own type, located on each super universe capital.
Okay, so did you notice what the distinction is there? There's a personal contact and there's a reflective contact. Okay, he's in personal contact. Okay, what does it say there? With, you know, the she in his super universe. At the individual superuniverse level. That's a personal contact. Okay, it's a she, a he to a she. Okay? But he has no personal contact at the collective level. Okay? Just a reflective contact. A non-personal contact. Okay? But it's fascinating that, see, that's why sometimes they just call them reflective spirits. That's when you're just talking about this reflective contact. But if they say reflective mother spirits, they're pointing out that there's a mother aspect there too, where there can be a personal contact. You know? The seven in our super universe make a mind womb, which our master spirit has personal contact with. But he has no personal engagement on the collective super universe level. You know? But he does have this reflective contact. Yeah. This non-personal, holistic contact.
These master spirits are not only the supporters and augmenters of the sovereignty of supremacy, but they are in turn affected by the creative purposes of the Supreme. Ordinarily, the collective creations of the master spirits are of the quasi-material order, power directors, etc., while their individual creations are of the spiritual order, supernifum, etc. But when the master spirits collectively produced the seven circuit spirits in response to the will and purpose of the Supreme Being, it is to be noted that the offspring of this creative act are spiritual, not material or quasi-material.
But they're not personal. Okay, and this is more of the story that we're just playing out. So the moment that you have the Ancients of Days give rise to the creative mother agencies, and you have at the collective super universe level, the collectively the master spirits, engage that mind womb, and they're pointing out that as soon as they go like grab outward, it's reflected inward into the central universe. The moment they grab that collective mind of the super universes, it gives rise to the seven circuit spirits back in the central universe. And so we'll pick up that story next week, thinking of a little bit more about the mindedness in the central universe. Okay, all right. So let's. But the rest of it's fairly straightforward. Like I said, that was the tricky part to get through that mindal part there. Okay.
And as it is with the master spirits of the super universes, so it is with the triune rulers of these super creations, the Ancients of Days. These personifications of Trinity, Justice, Judgment, in time and space are the field fulcrums for the mobilizing almighty power of the Supreme, serving as the sevenfold focal points for the evolution of Trinitarian sovereignty in the domains of time and space. From their vantage point, midway between paradise and the evolving worlds, these Trinity origin sovereigns see both ways, know both ways, and coordinate both ways.
That whole bit about the creative agencies, he was thinking about that other way, not just looking down as judges over the local universes, like we often talk about them. What about that other direction? See, we're trying to flesh out some of that other direction to their, to their action.
But the local universes are the real laboratories in which are worked out the mind experiments, galactic adventures, divinity unfoldings, and personality progressions, which, when cosmically totaled, constitute the actual foundation upon which the Supreme is achieving deity evolution in and by experience. In the local universes, even the creators evolve. The presence of the conjoint actor evolves from a living power focus to the status of the divine personality of a universe mother spirit. The creator son evolves from the nature of existential paradise divinity to the experiential nature of supreme sovereignty. The local universes are the starting points of true evolution, the spawning grounds of bona fide, imperfect personalities endowed with the free will choice of becoming co-creators of themselves as they are to be.
Just one thing to notice there, see? The creative spirit adds on the mother type deity, mm-hmm. the creator son, when he becomes a master creator son, master means relative to the supreme, he's adding on the supreme type deity.
Master means what?
Master, what have you mastered? You've mastered a relationship to the supreme. If you see the word supreme or master, or adjective supreme or master on something, like supreme trinity personalities or something, or master physical controllers, those two words are indicating a relationship with the supreme level, either fundamentally or by achievement. You've mastered it, or you just are made that way in relationship to the supreme level. Okay, so you tack on the supreme type deity, or you tack on the mother type deity. They're just different. What gets tacked on in the two?
So it's not necessarily experience.
Well, both of those are experiential because there's two different flavors of experiential that you're adding on. Mother type, supreme is mother and almighty together.
Okay.
See?
But the master physical controllers.
We'll get to them next. Okay. That's a little different, yeah. Okay. We'll worry about the the controllers next week.
The magisterial sons and their bestowals upon the evolutionary worlds eventually acquire natures expressive of paradise divinity and experiential unification with the highest spiritual values of material human nature.
Divinity there.
Can I read this over?
Yeah. Note the word divinity with magisterial sons, not deity, but divinity.
Thank you. The magisterial sons and their bestowals upon the evolutionary worlds eventually acquire natures expressive of paradise divinity in experiential unification with the highest spiritual values of material human nature.
Because they're not God.
And through these and other bestowals, the Michael creators likewise acquire the natures and cosmic viewpoints of their actual local universe children. Such master creator sons approximate the completion of sub-supreme experience. And when their local universe sovereignty is enlarged to embrace the associated creative spirits, it may be said to approximate the level limits of supremacy within the present potentials of the evolutionary grand universe.
It's not the fullness of supremacy, but a measure of it.
When the bestowal sons reveal new ways for man to find God, they are not creating these paths of divinity attainment. Rather, are they illuminating the everlasting highways of progression which lead through the presence of the Supreme to the person of the Paradise Father?
The Father's way, see, is being illuminated. Mm-hmm. The upholder, okay, has the path on it. Not the Father, the upholder has the path on it. And they shine a flashlight down the path, okay? They illuminate the way, okay? But they're not the way, the Father's not the way. I mean, It's the upholder. That's the actual path you're walking upon.
That's why they call it the presence of the
right.
Supreme.
The presence, see? The upholder. The finite upholder.
Wow.
The local universe is the starting place for those personalities who are farthest from God and who can therefore experience the greatest degree of spiritual ascent in the universe, can achieve the maximum of experiential participation and the co-creation of themselves. These same local universes likewise provide the greatest possible depth of experience for the descending personalities, who thereby achieve something which is to them just as meaningful as the paradise ascent is to an evolving creature. Mortal man appears to be necessary to the full function of God the Sevenfold, as this divinity grouping culminates in the actualizing supreme. There are many other orders of universe personalities who are equally necessary to the evolution of the almighty power of the supreme. But this portrayal is presented for the edification of human beings, hence is largely limited to those factors operating in the evolution of God the Sevenfold, which are related to mortal man.
But not wholly, notice, largely limited.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like we're trying to notice when it isn't just about, when they're giving you a little bit more, you know, not miss those spots when they're giving you a little bit more, because it's the answers to some questions that you'll have if you really try to think through the whole picture. So, yeah, they're very careful about the wording there. It's just like when they say, it's not directly related, but it's indirectly related. Yeah. Okay, so this, some of this last picture that they're painting, we'll pick up next time. We're going to kind of do a little bit what we did at the beginning of this one. Try to use what we're learning here a little bit. What we're going to do is we're going to finally understand the psychic circles. I'm going to show you how to understand the psychic circles. To use what they're teaching us here to unravel those mysteries of the psychic circles. Why are there seven? They just give you seven, three, and one because they say, well, it's a personal thing, and so... But there's still seven. Why? Okay. How does that work? Can we understand that? We're going to do that next time. Well, let's take a little moment. All of this vast relationship with the whole and the individuality of the whole, let's see if we can realityize it a little bit here. Let the Father do something with this within us, because we're all a little bit confused about what to do with it, as Jeanette was saying. Let's see if we can ask the thought adjuster within us to realityize this a little bit and show us how this can transform our sense of who we are and who God is.